Whenever you're ready.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Cameron Blazer, and I represent Lambert Sweat. Mr. Sweat appeals his sentence in the district court on two grounds. One, that sentence was procedurally flawed, and two, that sentence was substantively flawed. The government has not conceded those procedural or substantive errors, but has said that if such errors occurred, those errors were harmless. And as has been noted in Mr. Sweat's reply brief, we challenge that assumption by the government. The procedural errors in this case are twofold. First, the court failed to understand its authority to vary or depart. And as cited in the brief, the district court articulated a concern that Congress had set forth significantly onerous guidelines related to the specific kinds of drug and gun crime for which Mr. Sweat was convicted, and indicated without expressly stating that it was his unhappy lot and that the judgment must be to impose a career offender sentence, in spite of the fact that Mr. Sweat had argued for a sentence in line with the substantive guidelines related to the drug and gun charges for which he was convicted. And so he was a criminal history category 3 and was facing about 106 to 117 months of incarceration on the substantive count, but because he was moved from criminal history 3 all the way up to criminal history category 6 and offense level 34, his guideline range jumped to 262-month bottom.
Let me ask this. Didn't Congress give direction to the Guidelines Commission to develop guidelines for this particular situation?
It absolutely did. 28 U.S.C. Section 994.
So how do we know Judge Duffy's not referring to that instruction?
Well, I think that instruction, though, the instruction in Section 994 requires the commission to assure that the guidelines specify a sentence to a term of imprisonment. Judge Duffy certainly could be acknowledging that the guidelines are as stiff as they are because of Section 994, subsection H, but because Mr. Sweat asked for a sentence different from that and articulated specific factual and legal reasons that such a sentence was warranted, Judge Duffy was required to go further than that. I think this court's precedent in Carter indicates that every convicted person, citing U.S. Supreme Court law, is an individual study in the human failings that sometimes mitigate and magnify the crime and punishment in each case. And that's precisely why the procedural requirements dictate that the district court articulate a specific rejection of those reasons propounded by Mr. Sweat for that lower guideline sentence. And that moves into the second part of the procedural error here, which is that the court failed to make a record of its reasons for the chosen sentence. While I certainly would not fault the court for its communication with Mr. Sweat as a person, as an individual, the court made it clear that he had listened to the folks who had spoken on behalf of Mr. Sweat and listened to Mr. Sweat as well. But that's a different thing than making an individualized, fully articulated legal explanation for the rejection of the sentence requested by Mr. Sweat.
Well, what would the court have had to do then in this case in order to have built a record, in your view?
I actually don't think it would have been particularly onerous. I think if the court had merely said, this is the kind of case that the sentencing guidelines, this is a typical career offender case.
Well, can't we infer from the fact that he said that the prior convictions have failed to get his attention, and this is why I'm imposing this sentence?
And Your Honor, I think you could infer that, but I think that it you could just as easily infer that the arguments that counsel made below for a sentence in line with the guidelines applicable to the offense conduct, that those guidelines contemplated that same criminal history, and that was pointed out to the court, and so the court was obligated to respond to that non-frivolous argument made on behalf of Mr. Sweat. I think the court clearly did consider Mr. Sweat's criminal history, but didn't establish how that criminal history was more akin to that of a career offender than that of a criminal history category 3, which is what he otherwise would have been. And in a case where, and this happens all the time, a career offender comes in and asks for a bottom of the guidelines sentence, I think the obligation of the court is less than what it was under in this circumstance, where a specific sentence underlaid by the factors in 3553A was requested, and those factors were not reflected in the career offender sentence that was handed down. And again, it's incumbent upon defendants at the district court level to make a record, to make that specific request. U.S. versus Lynn requires it, U.S. versus Johnson requires it. It is similarly incumbent upon the district court to make a record that will permit effective appellate review of the reasons for that court's decision. Because, of course, then it comes in, then we have to shift into the substantive issues presented in the case, in which Mr. Sweat requested a sentence which he argued would be sufficient but not greater than necessary under Section 3553A. And instead, the district court elevated the career offender guideline to a position of preeminence over all other factors and failed in its chosen sentence to reflect the nature and circumstances of Mr. Sweat, specifically his long history of gainful employment, as well as his attempts at rehabilitation during the 2 years of incarceration that predated his sentencing.
Well, didn't the district court discuss that with him? He mentioned the pretrial detention, his prior offenses, legitimate employment, behavior, etc. Didn't he talk to him about that in the record?
He acknowledged all of those things, but failed to explain why those factors, which were argued and tied directly to 3553A factors, did not override the application of the career offender guidelines, which are but one factor under 3553A for the court's consideration. Excuse me. And so the court did not establish that. The court didn't even acknowledge the specific request for a 106 to 117 month sentence. It said, I can't do what your people are asking me to do, I think was what he said. But when a specific sentence is requested, I think this court's precedent demands that the court specifically explain why that sentence is not appropriate and the chosen sentence is. So there needs to be, and it doesn't need to be a long drawn out explanation, but there needs to be a comparison between the sentence requested and the sentence chosen by the court. If the court rejects those arguments made by the defendant at sentencing, that rejection must be clear and must be grounded in the legal and factual circumstances that the court found important in making that decision. And further, with regard to the substantive unreasonableness here, this is one of those cases where unwarranted disparity is caused by application of the career offender guidelines, because the exact same conduct committed by another person who was a criminal history category 3 would have warranted a 106 to 117 month sentence, and instead Mr. Sweat is going to do 22 years in prison because he was arbitrarily classified as a career offender based on Section 994, subsection H of Title 28. So For all of these reasons, the procedural and the substantive errors, Mr. Sweat respectfully requests that the sentence be remanded, be vacated and remanded for further sentencing hearing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The context of the case makes clear that Judge Duffy did understand that he had discretion to vary downward from the sentencing guidelines. And during the plea colloquy with this defendant, as district judges often do, he explained to the defendant, you understand that your lawyer may have given you some advice on how the guidelines may apply in your case, but you need to know that in some cases, and then he corrected himself and said, in all cases, I have discretion to vary either down or up from those guidelines. Do you understand that? And the defendant said, yes, sir, you're in charge, Judge. So the explicit record in this case indicates that Judge Duffy did understand that he had discretion to vary from the guidelines. Both of the sentencing memoranda that were submitted to the judge acknowledged his discretion to depart. Both sides argued at the sentencing hearing that the judge did have discretion to depart. And in fact, the whole conversation centered on the fact that the judge could depart if he wanted to. Otherwise, there would have been no reason to discuss the defendant's arguments in mitigation on why the judge should impose a sentence that was lower than the guideline range. Also, Judge Duffy gave an individualized explanation for his sentence. In fact, he accepted as sincere a lot of the things that the defendant had to say, and as compelling some of his witnesses who testified on his behalf. And he said, it looks like you're on the right track. You've been through this drug program. You're miles ahead of a lot of the defendants who appear before me, and I hope you keep that attitude up. But in the end, the judge also cited the policy reasons that underline the guidelines and made a decision that the policy reasons undergirding the guidelines were more compelling than the arguments that were offered in mitigation. So based on that record, the government submits that there was no indication that the defendant's sentence was procedurally unreasonable, and the defendant has failed to carry his burden to show that it was substantively unreasonable, which carries on appeal a presumption of reasonableness. And for those reasons, the government would respectfully ask this court to affirm the sentence.
There's a lot of language that Judge Duffy used which supports her view. That is, he says, you know, Congress has gotten sick and tired of this. I'm not going to be able to do what you folks want me to do. The sentence must be a term of imprisonment. Now, what's the single biggest reason you can give us that shows he recognizes that he's not bound by the guidelines?
Judge Traxler, the single biggest reason would be his explicit statement on the record that he had such a discretion.
During the initial taking of the guilty plea?
Correct.
But what during the sentencing process shows that?
I think the fact that he acknowledged the defendant's arguments, the fact that he had read the memoranda and he was listening to their arguments, but also the fact that this conversation was even taking place. I think if the judge had thought that he had no discretion to depart from the guidelines, he could have simply said to the parties, why are we wasting our time even talking about this? The guidelines are what they are, and I have no discretion to depart. And so the fact that they had an extended conversation about it, it was premised on the fact that he, in fact, had the discretion to depart.
And how would you have us distinguish Herder?
I think Herder can be distinguished on two grounds. One, in Herder, the judge had already announced sentence before there was any discussion about whether, you know, judge, we'd like to preserve an argument that you vary downward. And that didn't even happen until after the judge had already pronounced sentence. But more importantly, in Herder, there was no indication in the opinion that the judge had acknowledged his discretion as we have in this case. We have an explicit acknowledgement, I have the discretion in all cases to go either down or up from the guidelines.
And Herder, had they gone back and had as part of the JA the transcript from the taking of the guilty plea?
I don't know.
In other words, you and I both know that's standard statement. That's a standard statement made by district judges taking a guilty plea. So I would expect if we went back and looked in the record at Herder, we would find the same statement having been made by that trial judge as Judge Duffy made.
And I certainly can't deny that may well be the case. I don't remember it being mentioned in the opinion, but I think you're certainly correct. There's a pretty good chance because, as you say, it's a matter of course for district judges when they're advising defendants. They want the defendant to understand so that he can make a knowing plea. Now, your attorney may have said one thing about what sentence you're likely to receive under the guidelines, but you need to understand that I can go up or down from that. I would direct your attention, and it's an unpublished case that was decided this year. It's United States versus Bligeon. The Westlaw site is 2012 Westlaw 198-08. It is an unpublished case, but it's a case involving almost identical facts, same district court judge. Judge had said during the guilty plea colloquy, I have the discretion to depart, and this court found that the district court was well aware of his discretion and therefore affirmed the sentence really on the same grounds that are being discussed here.
Okay. Any other questions? I think we understand your argument. Mr. Johnson, let's hear from Ms. Blazer.
Thank you. Reply.
Well, Judge Traxler, I think you honed in on the real issue here, which is that while Judge Duffy did acknowledge at the guilty plea colloquy that he had discretion, as Mr. Johnson has noted, that was a part of making certain that the plea was knowingly and voluntarily made. The purpose of that statement at the plea colloquy is to make sure that the defendant knows just because your lawyer told you were going to get a sentence doesn't mean I might not give you something worse. Yes, he says I can go down, I can go up, but that the purpose of that statement at the plea colloquy doesn't have any bearing on what sentence is ultimately determined. Another thing that Judge Duffy said in this hearing and says at every hearing is we don't know the guidelines yet. Now, I would argue that in an ordinary guidelines case where you've got offense conduct, criminal history, those things come together to make a sentencing guideline range, the variation that you will find in the Fourth Circuit and specifically in the District of South Carolina varies widely. That difference varies much, that there's much less difference when somebody gets tagged with the career offender guideline.
But he did qualify for career offender status, didn't he?
He certainly did, and there was no objection made to his career offender status. There was a request for a departure or variant sentence in line with Section 3553. Because, again, Section 3553 includes but does not limit the sentencing calculus to the sentencing guidelines. As this court and the Supreme Court precedent has shown, the starting place for a sentencing is a correct calculation of the sentencing guidelines. There's no argument being made here that Mr. Sweat's guidelines were improperly calculated. That was acknowledged in the district court, and it is not at issue. But this case is just like Herder in the sense that if we review Herder and the statements made in Herder by that district judge, those statements were not express statements. I do not have authority to depart from this guideline. They were repeated references to the will of Congress that led the court to be concerned in the absence of a more developed record that the court misapprehended its discretion to depart. I certainly cannot argue to you that Judge Duffy expressly failed to recognize his ability to depart, but I think that the record suggests with those the sentence has to be, those kinds of statements indicate a fealty to what was to the will of Congress as expressed through the sentencing guidelines, but, and those aren't the same.
Judge Duffy didn't think he had the authority to do it. Do you think he would have sat there and let you argue to him that he does and never said a word about wasting time?
I think, Judge Traxler, the gentility of the district court in Charleston is such that we are given wide latitude no matter what the likely decision is going to be. And so I don't think we can infer from his charitable offering of time that he did not misapprehend that discretion.
That is the best possible answer you could give.
Well, with that, unless the court has any further questions, I will simply restate the request that the case be vacated and remanded for resentencing.
Okay, thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel and then